news and opinions are based on facts presented from a conservative, constitutional point of view. Now, here's Johnny.
Hey, y'all. Thank you so much for tuning in again today. Today is Sunday, February 9th, 2020, and I'm about to share with y'all my interview with Mr. Mark Robinson. I am ecstatic about this. I'm endorsing this man with everything I have to become the next Lieutenant Governor of North Carolina. But before we get into that interview, let me share with you a little bit about USCCA. USCCA is here to give every responsible armed American the education, training, legal, and financial protection that they need. And today, they're giving you not one, but up to four chances to win $1,000 toward any firearm you want. Well, how do I jump into this promotion, Johnny? Well, it's pretty simple. Just text Johnny to 87222. That's Johnny to 87222. And find out what USCCA has to offer you today. This is their promotion to try to introduce themselves to you. I do not know how long this is going to last. So if I was you, I would text Johnny to 87222 and check him out. All right, so without further ado, you probably know who Mr. Mark Robinson is. I played an audio clip a couple of weeks ago from where he was standing in front of Greensboro City Council and addressed them as, "I'm the majority." Y'all remember that? France, the man, the legend, a great American patriot. God willing, the next Lieutenant Governor of North Carolina, Mr. Mark Robinson. Hey, Mark, it's great that you're joining us here today on my little podcast here.
Yes, sir.
I'm doing, man. I got my coffee going on. I got my wife's coffee mug, the one that says, "I don't need Google. My husband knows everything." How accurate.
Yeah.
All right, before we actually get into the questions here, why don't you take a moment and introduce yourself?
Well, my name is Mark Robinson. I'm from Greensboro, North Carolina. Lifelong resident of North Carolina. Lifelong resident of Greensboro. I guess most folks in North Carolina and across the country know me now because of a viral video where I addressed the Greensboro City Council concerning our gun rights. After that, I did some traveling and speaking, and now I've decided to run for Lieutenant Governor of North Carolina.
What made you decide for Lieutenant Governor? Why not, the Senate, House, or U.S. Congress?
Well, I feel like I really want to make it an impact at home first, and I feel like the Lieutenant Governor's office gives me a chance to be able to do that. I think it fits my particular set of skills just right, so that's why we chose that office.
Works for me, man. With all this Second Amendment stuff going on, especially during the Super Bowl with Michael Bloomberg out there, that man is dangerous.
Yeah.
What can you do with Dan Forrest? Please, God, let these two great men become Lieutenant Governor and Governor. But what can you do with working with Dan Forrest to help make North Carolina a sanctuary state?
When it comes to the Second Amendment.
Yes, sir.
Well, I certainly think that we could make that declaration as a state, but I think we need to make sure that we try to get some laws that we've been trying to pass here for the past few years. One of the things that I'm heavily in favor of, constitutional carry for law-abiding citizens. I believe if you haven't committed a crime and you can legally buy a handgun, you should be able to carry it, and you shouldn't have to ask the sheriff's permission to do so. And I think that's one of the things we could work on to get done. We also need to make sure that we limit any type of restrictions, that, like the restrictions we're seeing in Virginia now, where you can only buy one handgun a month. And really, more than anything, make the statement plain that we understand why the Second Amendment is in place, and we wholeheartedly embrace why the Second Amendment is in place.
Have you heard about, talking about Virginia, did you hear what happened the last couple of days?
I did not. What's going on there in the last couple of days?
They crammed through the assault weapons ban, and they made all those that was there to protest it, they kicked them all out. The police had to escort them all out before they proceeded.
Wow. Well, it just, all the stuff that's going on in Virginia right now, it proves the one thing as conservatives that we've been saying for years, that if we give these leftists all the power and all the control, the very first two things they're going to come after, they're going to come after unborn children, and they're going to come after law-abiding citizens' right to bear arms. And Virginia is proving that. Virginia is making moves to bring radical abortion to Virginia. They're making moves to bring basically an end to the Second Amendment in Virginia. So they're proving to be exactly what we've been saying they are for years. And it's the only silver lining in this bad thing for Virginia. People are finally waking up and realizing that what conservatives have been screaming from the rafters for years is absolutely true. These people want to take away our guns. Bottom line. That's what they're moving through.
Yeah, I've been saying it on my podcast forever that Virginia is the blueprint for what the Democratic left wants. But also, here in North Carolina, we have the education lottery.
Yes.
And I know here in Stanley County, our taxes for, you know, everything like gasoline, cigarettes, food, whatever the case may be, the county taxes went up to help pay for the schools. So my question to you is this. As Lieutenant Governor, can we get an audit on what's happening with the education lottery?
Well, the first thing we need to do is make this statement plain and clear. Throwing money at the problems that our public schools have apparently doesn't work, because we keep throwing money and nothing's fixing it. It's the same way with a lot of cities and municipalities across the country. They throw money at the problem and to try to fix it. That is not the issue. The issue with our education system, number one, is that we're not running our education system with solid conservative principles that teach our children the skills that they need to be successful in life. That's number one. Number two, when you talk about a quote education lottery, as far as I'm concerned, the lottery is nothing but a tax on poor people. It needs to be ended. And I'm not ashamed to say that. It needs to be ended in this state. The state should not be sanctioning gambling. Gambling is, if you look at any of the statistics, it'll tell you that they sell the most amount of tickets in the poorest communities. Those are dollars that those folks could be using for a myriad of things, up to and including feeding their children, feeding themselves, or even investing in small ways, all the stock market, a whole host of things they could be doing with that money. And we should be advising them to do that instead of encouraging them to gamble through the lottery.
I totally agree with you on that. I really do. I was surprised that it even passed here in North Carolina. But you touched on education, and that's really big to me. I mean, when I graduated high school, I was kind of forced out in Ohio. Please forgive me. But I have third grade reading, third grade math, and fourth grade spelling. And I'm college educated. And yet, I know that back in the day, I think it was Bush that said No Child Left Behind Act. But yet, throughout the country, including North Carolina, they implemented this ridiculous law for Common Core math. Now, my son calls it dumbing it down. What can we do about that?
Well, that's one of the things that we need to make sure that we get things in place to be able to finally smash Common Core forever in this state. That's number one. Number two, when you talk about No Child Left Behind, sure, we might not be leaving any child behind, but we're certainly slowing up all the children. I mean, we're causing our children not to be proficient in reading, in writing, in mathematics. We're causing them not to be proficient all the way across the board. And that's just not in elementary school. That's all the way through 12th grade. We're struggling to keep kids on a track of being proficient in those three areas because we're not heavily concentrated on the right things. We need to get back to the basics, and we need to get back to having some discipline in these schools. Sure, we don't want to leave children behind, but we also don't want to cause 35 children out of 40 to have to suffer and not get the education that they need because we're concentrating too heavily on five. You know, we have outside agencies that can help children that are quote, falling through the cracks. We have our social services. We have nonprofit groups. We have religious group organizations that can fill in those gaps. We need to shore up those things and let those folks handle those issues while the schools focus completely on their two missions, which is to teach and to learn. I believe if we do that, we can really increase education and make it what it's supposed to be in this state.
I support you wholeheartedly, I'm telling you. Check this out. There's a statistic out there, It's like over 70% of high school graduates do not know what the five basic freedoms of the First Amendment is, let alone what the Bill of Rights are. My daughter-in-law doesn't even know who the vice president is.
Right.
And this is like, you know, when it comes to North Carolina, that affects us here, too. I mean, how can they help themselves? They don't even know what history is. I mean, we got a bunch of people ripping down Silent Sam because they don't know the history of it.
Right.
It's kind of sad. Right.
Well, the problem is we're not teaching civics. And civics is a very important class because it teaches our children how to operate inside a constitutional republic, what their responsibility is, and how to carry that responsibility out. You know, I would submit to you that most adults don't know those things that you just mentioned. I've sat in the classroom with college students that didn't know the difference between the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution. I've sat in classrooms with history majors who are in their third year of college, fourth year of college, that did not know that the Revolutionary War started before the Declaration of Independence was written. I mean, there's a whole myriad of things that our children are not learning, and a lot of things that are sad to say that adults in our society don't know. It's because we're not putting that heavy concentration on it during those education years. We need to get back to that and make sure that folks understand what kind of system they live under and how to operate inside that system.
Well, what about those that like destroyed Silent Sam and destroying our history? If you're elected lieutenant governor, please, God let it happen. How can we take accountability for that?
Repeat your question. I'm sorry.
Those activists that like destroyed Silent Sam and is destroying monuments around our state.
Yes.
How can we hold them accountable?
Okay, the first thing we need to do is not call them activists. They're not activists. They're criminals. Activist was what you saw in Virginia, who went to Virginia, held their signs, had their, you know, voiced their grievances, cleaned up their trash, and left. That's an activist. A criminal is a person who picks up bricks and rocks and busts out the Walmart windows or goes down and tears up Silent Sam. We need to make that distinction first. Those guys and gals that tore down Silent Sam were not protesters. They were destroying private property. They should have been arrested, they should have been held accountable, and they should have been responsible for paying any associated fees with re-erecting that statue. That's number one. Number two, we need to enact some laws that keep people from being able to do this, and laws that will have teeth. Because if these folks want these statues to come down, I can't tell them not to go out and voice their opinion about it, but I can tell you, you're not going to deface people's property. You're not going to go out at the end of the day of night at a mask and destroy stuff. You're not going to do it. We're going to hold you accountable for that, up to and including imprisoning you and fining you heavily.
You mentioned Virginia and the Patriots that was there. I did a podcast a couple weeks ago. I was shocked at this. They actually brought trash bags with them to Richmond and cleaned up Richmond. It was cleaner than when they arrived. It was amazing.
Yep. They did the same thing at President Trump's inauguration.
See, that's what Patriots do. They left. That's what patriots do. We take care of each other.
That's right. It shows you the difference between the left and the right. The right respects life, liberty, pursuit of happiness, all those things, and they also respect what they have.
This is
they
true.
Feel like they know that they live in a blessed land, and they know that they live in an environment that's safe, and they want it to be prosperous, and so they try to take care of it as best they can. It shows you that stark difference, like I said, between the left and the right.
Here's another one for you. Another question here. I lived in South Florida for 10 long years, and I know Florida is a state that does not have any state taxes. Is there any way possible we can make North Carolina the same way, you know, eliminate the state taxes?
I certainly think we can work towards that goal. You know, when you talk about taxes in this state, and this goes directly back to the education issue also. Back when the Republicans took over in around, I guess, 2010 is when they took over, 2011, they set on a course to completely refigure our tax code, completely redo it. And as they were doing it and saying they were going to lower personal income taxes and lower corporate taxes, the left was screaming, saying, oh, you're going to have huge deficits, blah, blah, blah. Not only do we not have huge deficits, we have a surplus. And not only do we have a surplus, because we've created a tax code that's so attractive to business, we moved up to number one on the Forbes list for business destination. And we're seeing organic business growth in North Carolina, not economic development where you have to bribe people to come here. We're seeing true economic growth where people want to come here and invest in this state because they know the taxes are low and they're going to be able to reinvest in their communities. These are the types of things that we need to be teaching our students. These are the types of things we need to be teaching, the principles we need to be showing them. Saying, look, if you're responsible for the taxes you take up, you can lower them. It's just as long as you make sure that you're spending the money wisely and you're spending it in a way that's for the benefit of the people. And North Carolina is showing that now. And I think if we continue on the track we're on, that certainly can be a goal in the future.
Oh, definitely. And with the Republicans coming here for their convention, I think it's August, that's going to bring a lot of revenue to Charlotte.
Absolutely.
But here's my concern with Charlotte. I'm going to read you a news article real quick, just a headline. This is from last year, WBTV.com. Nearly 500 undocumented immigrants released from North Carolina jails despite detainer. There are sheriffs all across this country. I'm sorry. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Just in time for the election.
Yeah. But there are sheriffs all across this state who are willingly announcing, we're not going to work with ICE.
Right.
How, as Lieutenant Governor, how can we, bring these mayors and these sheriffs, how can we bring them in and say, look, there's this law, you got to follow it?
Right. Now, I've talked about this before. And I think what's going to have to happen, if we can get, we need to get conservative leadership in the House and the Senate. We need to get those folks together. When we need to try to get some good legal minds together, because it's going to be a tough task to figure out how to do it without violating people's constitutional rights, both state and federal. But I believe we can do it if we sit down and work on it. We need to craft some type of legislation that's going to make sanctuary cities illegal. I don't know how it can be done, but I believe we have some great minds here in this state that we can rely on to come together and build a coalition of people that can craft some legislation that's going to make sanctuary cities illegal, because sanctuary cities are an invitation and a haven for crime. And the people who are coming across the border that just want to make money, sure, they're the majority of those folks. But there's also those folks that are coming in to deal drugs, gangbang, commit acts of terror, and human traffic. We can't have those people congregating in our cities, plying their wares to the citizens in those cities. So we need to try to come up with something that's going to make sanctuary cities impossible in this state.
I hope and pray it can happen. I mean, the fact that a federal judge is legislating from the bench and preventing our state IDs is kind of scary. It really is.
Yes. It is very scary. It's one of the things I've been telling folks out on the road that we have got to get our North Carolina Supreme Court, we have got to get it back packed with constitutional conservatives who are going to follow the law and not legislate from the bench, because right now that doesn't exist. And like I said, we can have a conservative governor, we can have a conservative lieutenant governor, we can have supermajorities in our House and Senate. No matter if we don't have the judges, because they can block every piece of legislation that we pass.
We're seeing it now.
Absolutely. Absolutely. This lady, Loretta Biggs, is an Obama appointee. She's a disciple of Eric Holder. She's a firm believer in the Suit to Your Blue program. So they're certainly going to hold that up during the election. And, of course, the folks out there that don't want voter ID are going to take advantage of it. So we've got to be ready.
Oh, yeah. I heard you yesterday when you heard Albemarle, when you met the fine folks here. You're saying that you're about law enforcement and you're also about our veterans.
Yes.
Yeah, a very good friend of mine, his name is Tentu. He runs an operation called Operation Decisive Victory. It's a nonprofit organization to help out with our veterans. I kind of wanted to throw that out at you. But as Lieutenant Governor, what can we do to let our veterans and our police know that we care about them, we love them? I mean, that's not an easy job.
Well, the first thing we need to do with our veterans is start making them a priority again. We need to stop putting them on the back burner and using them as a so-called political football. We need to make sure that the programs that we have already out there that we've tried to pass in the before, that we get those things done. And one of them that we really need to do immediately is we need to stop taxing these guys' pensions. We tried to do that legislatively a couple of times, and it's failed. We need to make sure we go ahead and get that done and get it through and take that burden off these veterans. The second thing I think we need to do is we need to create some type of program that identifies a seriously wounded veteran and make sure that every obstacle to them getting the care that they need is removed, including red tape, transportation, whatever it may be. We need to make sure that these men and women are getting the care as quickly as they were. They're getting the care as quickly as they were shipped off to go fight for us. We need to make sure that we're doing that for them. Now, those are the two things I think that we need to start with our veterans first. Then, of course, there's a whole myriad list of other things we could do. But immediately, those are the first two things I think are the priority we need to focus on. And then when it comes to law enforcement, I could think of one example of legislation I think we should pass. I think that assault on a police officer, whether it be spitting, punching, whatever it is, it should be a felony, period. Assault on a law enforcement officer should be a felony, because when you assault a law enforcement officer, you're breaking a basic tenet of civil society. That means you don't care about the core principle of civil society. It's having that line in the sand, which is law enforcement. So I think that assault on officers should be a felony. And then the major thing when it comes to law enforcement is not necessarily legislative. It's more of a standpoint of being able to raise your voice. When these law enforcement officers find themselves in trouble because of these social justice warriors, the very first person that needs to come to their aid are elected officials. They're the ones that need to back these guys up so they feel like they have the confidence they need to be able to go out on the street and be proactive in fighting crime. That's not happening right now, and it needs to change. We need to put people in office who are not afraid to back these guys and gals up.
And again, to prove your point, we have a mayor in Charlotte who's doing just that. He's causing division, trying to cause nonsense. Earlier this week, there was an incident where an officer-involved shooting at a Burger King. A dude did not put the gun down and ended up, the officer had to discharge his firearm. The police department said this is this whole thing was justified. But the left-leaning court system said, no, this is illegal, and now the guy's out of a job and looking at prison time. So I told you where you're coming from.
Right. Well, the bottom line is this. One of the things I get tired of hearing every day on television is officer-involved shooting. We don't ever hear criminal-involved shooting. I mean, police officers are not just out just shooting people at random. But police officers, 99.9% of the time when a police officer fires his weapon, it's because he's firing at a criminal who's done something that's endangered somebody's life, either his life or someone else's life. But every time we turn on the television, we hear officer-involved shooting. Like police officers are just out shooting people at random. The news media should get back to reporting crime. And it shouldn't start with the police officer. It should start with the criminal. The criminal suspect should be the one under the gun, not the police officer. We turn that around. And then in the face of that, our elected officials are doing the exact same thing. They're not looking at the action of the criminal first. They're looking at the action of the police officer first. And even when it's proven the police officer's done nothing wrong, a lot of these people still side with the criminals. It's ridiculous. And the whole time these criminals are watching, and they know. They know they can go out on the street and do just about anything they want to do a lot of times and get away with it. It's a trend we've desperately got to change.
Well, I agree with you. I mean, what I do personally is if I see a group of police officers, rather be a Chick-fil-A or Zaxby's, wherever the case may be, I will buy them a dessert to show them my appreciation. I think a lot of people should do that.
Yeah, I think a lot of people do. The majority of people in this country respect and appreciate law enforcement for what they do. Now, that being said, I think law enforcement should definitely be held to a higher standard. And bad police officers should be punished to the absolute maximum. Because there again, a bad police officer who's breaking the law, just like that person who assaults a police officer, they're breaking down one of the core tenets of a civil society. They're taking the badge and the gun. They're using it for nefarious purposes, and that cannot be tolerated. Bad police officers should always be punished, and they should be punished to the maximum to send a message, because police officers, yes, they have great power, but with that great power comes great responsibility. and we need to hold them to that responsibility. But I would submit to you that 99.999% of those officers, they're good people doing a good job for an honorable reason. And we need to stand behind them. When they're right, which is most of the time, we need to stand behind them.
Now, if you're in North Carolina and you want to help this great, great patriot become lieutenant governor, how can we get them to help you out, Mark?
Well, right now, we're making a big push up towards the March 3rd primary. Early voting starts on the 13th, right? Starts Thursday, the 13th. We need folks to sign up on our website to come out and work the polls for us and pass out literature. And we also need donations, folks. Mark Robinson for NC.com is where you can go and sign up to volunteer and donate to our campaign to help us continue to spread this message and win this primary. So those are the two things we need more than anything right now.
Well, I'm making sure I'm going to sign up to help out too, man, because I travel throughout Charlotte. I'm handing out your flyers and stuff, and I need more signs to put around Charlotte. I really do. So,
yes, sir. We're working on that right now.
All right, my friend. Listen, I appreciate you so, so very much for coming on my podcast. Hopefully,
no problem.
Hopefully we'll get you in that way, in the governor's mansion as lieutenant governor, brother.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much for having me on.
All right, my brother. I appreciate you so much. Have a blessed one now.
All right. Thanks.
All right. Y'all, I'm telling you, this man is epic. I hope y'all fell in love with this guy like I did. I mean, I have never met any politician, rather be local, state, or federal, so down to earth, so laid back, like Mark Robinson. This man is an amazing human being. He is traveling throughout North Carolina. Check out his website to find out where you can see him, meet him, and shake this man's hand. I'm telling you, this guy is amazing. Mr. Mark Robinson needs to become the next lieutenant governor of North Carolina. This man means what he says. And I'm telling you, he will not disappoint us. Let's get him elected, okay? All right, on that note, we're going to end this special podcast, and I will see you guys next time.